everybody. Welcome back to the show. I have a special guest, Joe Wadsworth, the chief executive producer from the online recording studio. Joe, how are you doing today?
I'm all right. Thank you, Matt. And thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely. Yeah, great to have you on. I know we've been kind of going back and forth for a little bit, but perfect time to do this is at the beginning of 2022. And anybody out there that's kind of had the, you know, that burning desire to put out a single or to do their own song, you're the guy to talk to. So let's get into this a little bit. I want to start before we get into the actual origins of the online recording studio itself. Let's get a little bit about you there. So like your origins in music and, you know, how did you get into engineering and that sort of thing?
So I came from quite a musical family. And so both my parents worked as actor musicians in the West End here in London. And so I always grew up around music, and, you know, my dad had a big record collection. And so I was, you know, he showed me all the greats all throughout the years. And so I started to play a few instruments and kind of, I think early on, knew that I wanted to go into music in some way, and was fortunate enough to have experience sort of, you know, both sides of things. So the more contemporary side and pop and rock and all that sort of stuff, but also doing orchestral classical music and playing in a couple of orchestras and being able to tour with them and that stuff. So that was a lot of that came into play very, very early on. And then all through school, I was really into music and sort of was actually one of the music scholars at the schools that I went to. And so I kind of had this musical responsibility all the way through anyway. So that kind of fueled the fire, as it were. And I think probably when I was about 14 or 15, I really wanted to, it was about the time that Mark Ronson brought out his second album, Version, which has, so it's an all covers album. And, you know, it's the one that's got like the Amy Winehouse Valerie on it and the ones that people really associate with Mark Ronson. And I heard that. And I think something about the combination of A, it being a, you know, great album that has just some huge tunes on it. And the fact that they were all covers and that meaning that there were, it kind of showed me that there were so many possibilities of what could be done just with the same piece of material. That really fueled something in me. And I was, from that point, honestly, from listening to that album, it was the second CD I ever bought. The first CD, quite embarrassingly, was Toxic by Britney Spears. But the second CD was that. And from that point on, I knew that I wanted to work in music and run a record label. And then, so yeah, following on from that was like, right, well, I'm going to go to university and study music production. And that's where the online recording studio started.
Nice. Perfect. So let's get into it. Yeah. So where did you get the idea for the online recording studio? You know, how did it come to be? And were you marketing worldwide right away? Or were you kind of just testing the waters in around like the UK? Or how did that look?
So when it came to starting tours, as we sort of, when we sort of bring it down just to the letters, it was really, I was surprised that it wasn't already a thing, in all honesty. And I didn't really think that I'd really come up with anything. And I still feel like the concept is so simple that I couldn't really claim credit for coming up with it, because I just think that I was just one of the first people to actually really capitalize on it, because it's, you know, it's fairly simple, as you know, you'll hear, it's not, there's no like crazy technology or algorithm or some amazing thing that we've come up with. It's really just recording online. Like, it's just, you know, it very much does what it says on the tin. But it came out of, if I'm being totally honest, it came out of me going into university and then two things happening. The first one being that I found the course that I was on to be quite limiting and quite, you know, a bit disappointing, and kind of like it had a real one size fits all approach to teaching music production, which, so, you know, I'd be sat in lectures or sat in the studio with a, you know, a hip hop producer on one side of me and then like a heavy metal, death metal, goth producer on the right. And we were all learning the same stuff about how to go about things, which when you're learning the fundamentals is fine, but very soon things start to move apart and you need to have much more specificity when it comes to what you're learning. And so I found that blanket approach to be quite frustrating. And I sort of aired these concerns and they were just like, ah, it's okay, just keep going and whatever, keep paying us. And I was like, Okay. And then sort of on the paying side of things, the second thing that happened was I got a student loan. I was 19. I'd never had that much money like put into my bank account in one go. And so I did what any 19-year-old who has quite poor self-control and a lot of money in their bank account does, and just basically spent all of it on beer and pizzas and, you know, on everything that students spend their money on.
Yeah, the essentials.
And so it, exactly, you know, they're just those core things that you need to have to survive. And so it kind of came out of necessity that I was like, oh, right, I need to start actually making some money here. And then I just thought about, well, what I was never really that big on social media, and still to this day, on a personal level, I'm not a big social media person. From a brand perspective, it's core to what we do, but I, as a person using it, I'm not very good. And so I saw how many of the musicians that were at my university, because everyone was in one building for the dormitories. So the whole course, everyone pretty much who was on the course and across the different courses, so the performance courses, the jazz courses, you know, the classical courses, all were in one building. And I, through mixing with people and getting to know people and learning what they were doing with their music, saw how many people were using Instagram to promote their music. Now, this was, what, nine years ago maybe. And so we're talking a bit back now, before everyone was on Instagram in the way that they are now, before Instagram had all the features that it does now. But I saw how many people were on Instagram promoting their music, and I thought, oh, I better get on that and see what's going on, which was a really good thing, because I suddenly found that every day there were millions and millions of musicians posting their stuff on there, usually just them sat in their bedroom with a ukulele or sat at the piano, sat with a guitar, showing their music. And all of them wanted it to be sounding the best it can. You know, that's one thing that every single one of them had in common, was they wanted to sound the best they could. So on the one hand, there were all of these musicians posting on social media from all over the world. And so, yeah, we weren't UK centric to begin with, because Instagram isn't, you know, it's, I was just seeing everyone from everywhere. And that, so that's on one side. And then on the other side, I've got this building that I'm in, which is just full of really, really good musicians, all who want to work with artists, but don't necessarily know how to meet the artists or whatever. You know, I knew there were so many instrumentalists, and I just was like, well, I'll just bring those two together. There's an opportunity there, because they both want the same, or they, you know, they both kind of want each other, but they don't know how to meet each other or to connect. And so I started talking to people on Instagram and saying, you know, hey, how are you doing? I really like your music. I'll produce it. And so I would do the bits that I could. And then if we needed another musician, I'd just put something on the Facebook group of our building saying like, hey, I've got a few beers down here. If someone wants to come and play a trumpet solo on a track I'm recording. And that was kind of the currency that the first, you know, few dozen tracks of the online recording studio were paid in for the musicians. You know, I'd charge the artist like £50 or £100 because I was just recording it in my bedroom. And pretty quickly that grew to having too many projects on for me to do. And actually I wanted to increase the quality and focus more on the business side of things. So started to just pull in other producers from the course, and then left at the end of the first year and just focused on, you know, and have been doing this ever since and just growing the team.
Wow, that's a super cool story. And like, kudos to you, man, because like, that's what it is. That's what it's all about, is connecting some dots, recognizing where the opportunities are, and then bringing it together. So super cool story. Thanks for sharing that. The origin story is rad, like just for you to be able to connect the dots like you did. So yeah, kudos to you, and to be able to kind of pull back and realize where you can delegate and have all those people that are eager to do it. And I love the story about how you say, you know, yeah, the first currency basically exchanges, you know, beer, right? It's like, what, that's like the musician's currency, right? So that's great.
Pay people what they want and what they wanted at that time. They, you know, all I was doing was cutting out the middleman of them having to take the money that I would give them and then go to the shop and buy it. So in a way, I was trying to bring people together. You know, I was just trying to, the whole thing is just about bringing people what they want, you know?
Too funny, man. That's awesome. That's great. So yeah, so when you're working with some of these top producers, these session musicians, you got designers, yeah, promoters, all that, this all sort of organically came. So you've got this big pool to draw from. How many artists and sort of producers do you have not at your disposal, for lack of a better term, but sort of as your resources, at this case in, with the online recording studio.
So in terms of, do you mean like our own team? Like
right.
Our
as far as your team. Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So we've got, I don't know, 24 producers. We've got, you know, a few designers, and then with each of the producers, they have their own session musicians. A lot of them are multi-instrumentalists as well. So I couldn't tell you how many session musicians we have, because I honestly don't know.
Interesting.
Then we've got a couple of people who handle PR, that side of things, and some coaching to help people with their sort of their strategy and development and things like that. So, you know, my hope is that by the end of this year, we'll be up to a team of about 50.
Wow.
And I think that's reasonable based on our growth at the moment. And I think that's something that we can do. But really what's great is that because of the nature of what we do, because there are so many producers online, whenever we are getting to a point, and this is a point that we've actually just got to, so we're hiring at the moment, whenever we hit capacity, it's not difficult to find. You know, there's a lot of really, really talented producers who have, particularly, you know, during COVID, have had to adapt to working online, and so are people who maybe 2 years ago we couldn't necessarily hire, but we can hire now. And so it's, you know, we just put an ad out for a couple of days, we'll get a few hundred people applying to that, and then we do some interviews and stuff. And so that growth has been very organic. And so really, in terms of this sort of interdepartmental growth that you mentioned about the kind of the different services that we have, all of those have really come from people just saying, hey, you know, artists asking us, hey, do you do this as well? I need this. And us going, just leave that with me. And then going and seeing, you know, who we would need to bring in to be able to actually provide that service. So yeah, as it stands at the moment, probably, I don't know, somewhere between 20 and 30, and looking to grow to about 50 by the end of 2022.
That's brilliant. I love the idea that you guys have some coaching and everything involved as well. And basically, like you say, you're kind of doing a litmus test. People will more or less come to you, go, hey, do you have this service? And then you'll go, well, not yet, but you know, now we have the idea to. So, you know, the coaching. So this is very much like an all-encompassing thing. Like if somebody that's listening out there right now has, to your point, has a song they're kind of playing in their living room, you know, they have a circle of 10 or 12 friends that think they're fairly talented, they could come to you and, you know, they got session musicians, they got a producer they can work with, they have a coach that could kind of help them, they got PR people that could help them with maybe their social media or point them in the right direction. Like, this is a full-on experience as far as getting a musician to the next level on so many different you know, stages of their you know, from performance straight up to presentation to the world, correct?
Absolutely. And that's kind of the whole thing, is that we want to be able to help as many people as we can, regardless of what stage they're at, you know, what their level of experience is, and also what their goal is. Because people come to us for all different reasons, because there are a lot of people who are careerists, and, you know, this is like they're pursuing this as their career, and then, you know, we'll work with them on their PR, and we'll work with them on branding and things like that. But also then we have a lot of people who maybe they've been given it as a gift by their, you know, their parents, or and it's not just, and actually the age range is huge as well. And I think, you know, over this last year with COVID happening and loads of people being furloughed and just being at home, we saw a big uptick in men over 50 booking in for their sort of legacy albums, that, you know, of songs that they wrote back in the 80s that they wanted to finally get recorded. But yeah, that thing of growing it based on what people have asked for has meant that really we are set to help people with whatever it is. You know, a lot of people do start with a single. We like to work on EPs and albums, because you can really develop a relationship with the artist and sort of build a nice big project up there. And then it really comes down to necessity. As you know, as you mentioned, it really is, if someone wants that full experience of, you know, all of the bells and whistles of the branding and the coaching and the PR and the social strategy and all that, you know, stuff thrown in, then we can do that. Equally, if you just want to come and make a really good song that you can then show off to your mates how good it sounds, then we're just as set up to do that as well.
Tremendous. Yeah, it's a wide spectrum of things that you guys can do, which is awesome. I like you kind of touched on it earlier when you're talking about like the specificity of, like, you know, there's like the nuances of every genre of music. So hence, that's why you have all these different producers involved. So somebody could come to you that, you know, is into death metal, you could have a classical artist, and you have somebody there that knows that style of music. It isn't some guy that like, oh, I'll give it a try, I'm not into death metal, but I'll give it a try. There is somebody that would be able to cater to that specific style of music, right?
Yeah, definitely. And again, you know, coming back to that earlier point, that has come from the fact that people have asked us, you know, I make epic symphonic goth music, which, you know, I can't say I'm hugely familiar with, but someone will say that, and then, you know, we'll then put the feet, I'll say, you know, thanks for getting in touch, leave this with me, and I'll sort of reach out, and I'll, you know, reach out to our pool of producers, and I'll see, right, has anyone got any experience in this? If they don't, then, you know, maybe we'll have a look and find some. To be honest, these days we never have a situation where we don't have someone who's got experience, but in the early days of running tours, it was like, okay, right, who can we find, are they good, let's interview them, let's give a bit of training for the customer service, and, you know, that sort of side. But yeah, we get such a range of people, and that's one of the really nice things about this, you know, this line of work and being able to work with so many different artists, is that I get to be exposed to so many different genres, and in needing to be able to talk to artists about their music, have to learn, you know, whenever people send reference tracks, you know, I'll start listening to that artist, and it really helps to expand your sort of musical knowledge, having to speak to so many people who have different sounds that they're wanting to work on. But to answer your question, yeah, I mean, whatever it is that people need, we'll find a way to get it sounding its best.
It's awesome. How many repeat clients do you guys have? Like, do you have a success story as far as somebody that's had like their two or three albums deep with you guys? Well, what does that look like?
Yeah, a bunch. I mean, you know, we've been going, I suppose, properly about six, seven years now. It's, you know, the first few years we're fumbling about trying to work out how to get everything going. But yeah, I mean, we've got artists that we started working with, you know, in like 2017, 2018, that we're still working with today. Some people come and go, and so that maybe they'll work with us for a little bit, and then they'll go off and work with someone else, and then they'll come back. We did some research on this recently. I think it was about 75% of people come back to do at least two more tracks. And then about 50% of people will come back to do, in their sort of lifetime of working with us, will do at least four or five tracks. And so, you know, that's something that is really a testament to the hard work that our producers put in to just make sure that everyone has a really good experience and feels heard and feels like they're not overwhelmed and feel like they have a good connection. But yeah, there's a bunch of albums on the go at the moment. Some of them are like first albums. It's been interesting over this last couple of years with COVID, where people have been more open to immediately kind of coming in and starting with an album, because I think people have known that they're going to have a bunch of time, and honestly, obviously for some artists, budget is the key concern, but for the majority of our artists, the key concern is about timing. It's about, do I have the availability to be able to work on stuff, because our pricing is super reasonable, and, you know, it works out really well. So that's the key thing. And so yeah, there's a lot more albums than usual. And I think what we're trying to do now, and this is something that we've been bringing in new for the beginning of 2022 and are going to be running through this year and hopefully on into the future, is kind of switching up, offering more subscription models and a payment model that means that people can come in and do an album and pay it off over 12 months rather than having to front the entire money, you know, for everything as well. Because usually if you're getting an album, it comes with all the branding and all, you know, all the extra stuff. So it's more expensive than buying a single. We'll put it like that. But yeah, this subscription model is what we're hoping to do much more throughout this year, so that artists who have bigger projects but don't have a bunch of money to just sort of front, it means that they can continuously be working, not lose that momentum, and sort of have a great time and build up that relationship. So yeah.
That's a great idea. I love the payment process, because I think that's daunting for a lot of musicians. Is yeah, the money up front, right? Like when you do the ad, you know, yeah, the addition for everything, you know, you're looking at, you know, for us, you know, anywhere from 3 to 10 grand to 12 grand, depending on the spec, you know, what your end goal is, right? So to be able to sort of pay that off. Yeah, I think that's a great idea for you guys. So you kind of touched on a little bit here as far as just the overall experience that you guys provide. Obviously, when you're dealing with like artist temperament, there's, you got the shy people, you know, you get the sensitive people that are just, you know, I just, and everywhere in between, you get the big egos, you get all sorts of different colorful characters, shall we say. So what does that look like for you guys as far as like onboarding somebody? Is there sort of like a Zoom call like you and I are currently doing? Is there a few emails back and forth? Obviously, depends on the person's person's personality type. I guess, how do you navigate artist temperament as far as figuring out that you are the proper person for the artist?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. You're absolutely right that we get some colorful characters coming through, as you would, you know, if as anyone who has seen American Idol or The X Factor or any of those, you know, a lot of the people who enter those competitions are the same people who come to us. And I mean that right from the really, really talented people to people who are more experienced people. And, you know, we do get some people who we, you know, we'll always do what we can to make the best of what's available to us, because I think that everyone deserves a chance to be able to make music and express themselves and have something that they can be really proud of, you know, regardless of, you know, if you're a bit of a crackpot or whatever, or, but you know, that can be interesting. But in terms of dealing with temperament, I think we found that generally, because all of our team are musicians and are smart people, they know what the things are that make artists behave in certain ways, because either they can relate that to their own experiences and how they feel about stuff. But also because they just are so experienced now that they've kind of seen everyone, and, you know, they go, okay, so this is that type that we're dealing with now. I have an initial call with everyone. Every artist who starts with us, pretty much, unless they don't want to talk over the phone, or they'd rather just communicate solely via email or text. I have a chat with everyone, and so I think that's a nice way to kind of set the tone early on and show them what we're about and how we communicate and, you know, how we talk to each other. It's very rare that we have a situation where there's a problem, because I think, you know, we do have quite a good patience threshold as well for the slightly more complicated individuals. But fundamentally, if there is ever an issue, it comes, you know, and someone is being difficult, it comes down to there's something that's just not clicking for them. And our job is to make something click, whether that's not necessarily changing something in the music, but just making sure that they understand that they're being heard, or making sure that they understand that they have value in what they're doing. Or, you know, it's often more about kind of helping people feel more positive about insecurities that they have about their music. And, you know, once you kind of understand that people are only ever unpleasant because they feel unpleasant inside, and then it's your job to make them feel a bit more pleasant, then, you know, I think that, God, did that sound really like British? Like, it's all about being very pleasant, you know?
It definitely did, but I loved it. It was good. More pleasant. Yeah.
But I think it's just about, you know, being nice to people and making sure that they feel valued. And I think that whenever a problem does rear its head, it's usually resolved very quickly just by having a chat with someone and making sure that they know that their voice is being heard. I think that's the thing that creative people and performers, that's their big thing that gets them, is feeling like they're not being heard. And so once you are able to make sure that people know they have a voice, then yeah, it's kind of smooth sailing, to be honest. We have a lovely time working with our artists.
That's awesome. No, I love how you kind of paint that picture. Like, you guys are musicians, are producers for musicians and producers. You've been through the same, you've had the same probably levels of self-doubt at certain points. You've experienced yourself, and you've been exposed to it, whether it's through school, all the different personality types, as you mentioned, the goth person sitting beside you, the EDM person sitting beside you. You've been exposed to all of that. So, and I just like the way
precisely.
Yeah. As the way you summed it up is just making people feel uncomfortable, or sorry, making people feel uncomfortable. Yeah. Take out the opposite uncomfortable part, right? So, yeah.
I think so. And when we're training our producers, really, it's not a huge, obviously we've got the technical training of just, you know, for how we share our files and all that sort of stuff. But really, when it comes down to how I want people to engage with the artists, and a lot of this do it intuitively, because that's why we hire them, is because they just get it and they understand it. But there's three words that we always talk to people about when it comes to making music and being a great producer. The first one is just confidence. If you're confident in what you're doing, you know, that's going to help the artist feel more confident. That you're an authority, not an authority figure, but that you are, you know, an authority in what it is that you're doing, and that can be seen. So it's clear that the artist's music is in safe hands. And that ties obviously to the confidence, but then empathetic as well, empathy, because for a lot of artists, and almost probably for every artist who isn't coming and singing a cover version, but maybe even them as well, there's so much of themselves wrapped up in what they're sharing with us. And, you know, over the last few years, like the stories of some of the people that have come to work with us have been really inspiring, and some of them have had to really overcome huge difficulties in their lives to make music, or that's why they make music. And, you know, every musician is just trying to process something, really. You know, that's why we all do it. And I think that because of that, what's really important is that our team, whether it's the producers or the designers or anyone that the artist speaks to, it's important that our team are able to empathize with the position that they're in, because then that means that we can tailor the experience in a way that means that they're going to have the best time. And, you know, we respect where they've come from and what they've had to deal with. And we make sure that that translates into whatever it is that they're working on with us. You know, we make sure that is shown in the way that they want it to be. And I think that, yeah, really it comes down to confidence, authority, and empathy. And that's, if you can do all three of those, then you can basically do anything.
Yeah, good to go. And so you kind of talked about a little bit earlier, one of your initial dreams or visions was like a record label. Can you see that coming out of this, or do you already have a record label, or are you just, is that something that's sort of, it's manifested into something completely different, that being the studio that you're doing right now?
I don't think that record labels are really necessary anymore, in all honesty. I think that they take far too big a cut from most artists, and actually it's them taking a big cut from artists. It's, you know, it's kind of a numbers game. Obviously the people at the top are making loads of money, and that's great, you know, that's really good for them, and you know, the big artists are doing well, but they're still having a huge cut taken by other people. The time to do it yourself really has never been better as an artist. If you're an artist and you make music and you want to share what you're doing, all the tools are there available for you to be able to do it. Now, part of the reason why, you know, we started doing this payment plan is because we wanted to, you know, we want to be essentially providing the services of a record label, but kind of on a pay-as-you-go structure. Mm. So that you'd, and we don't own any copyright, so we don't claim any ownership of any of the music, any of the designs.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah, thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah.
Cool.
That belongs entirely to the artist. And so that means that any money that the music makes is theirs. And, you know, for some people who are getting their stuff picked up in for sync for TV and film and things like that, you know, we have a lot of artists who are able to entirely self-fund off of the back of the music that they, you know, they invested in their first bit of music with us and then got it picked up in something and then use that money to come back and make more. And it's kind of
amazing. Yeah.
Self-sustaining.
Absolutely.
But I just think that the concept of a record label, they can be really, really helpful. But unfortunately now, because equally, it's the best time to start up as an artist and do it yourself. It's also the best time to start a record label because all of the tools exist and you can market and stuff like that, which means that there's a lot of people who are record labels, in quotations, but really are not going to help you. But they're still going to take that cut, don't worry. They're not really going to help you. Right. And I think it's much more effective to empower artists to be able to help themselves and have a, you know, or have sort of learning how they do things on the go without someone who's going to take a cut and is very upfront about the fact that it's like, hey, you know, you pay us for what we do, but really what we want to do is get people to a point where they can be quite self-sustaining in what they do and then come to us just when they need us for this and that. So yeah, I think I wanted to run a record label when I was younger. And as I've got older, I've come to think that record labels are pointless. And I think that the way that we do things is the future of how these things should be done. And I think it's interesting because you see that not just in music. I think there's a lot of industries in which those big establishment companies actually are kind of losing their authority mostly because of the internet.
Right.
You know, if you look at how streaming affected the record labels, in the same way as things like Netflix have affected the film industry, and you know, it's meant that, and being able to have filming equipment means that people can put their own stuff out, and YouTube has meant that people are getting their sort of short burst entertainment. I think in all of the creative spaces, and maybe in other industries as well, those big companies that run things actually are going to they're having to massively adapt. But I think that our sort of model for what we do at Online Recording Studio is the future.
Absolutely. Totally agree with you. Just curious what your take was on it. Also curious what your take is on just streaming. We kind of talked about it. So the streaming, as far as, you know, what artists are actually getting. So you're getting on Spotify. It's awesome. It feels good. You got yourself on, you know, Apple Music or whatever. It's cool to see your profile show up. But the actual amount of money that you can get from these streaming sites, almost similar in the way that you're saying, like everybody, I read an article, I don't know what, you know, how true it is, but everybody at Spotify that works at Spotify is making six-figure salaries. But then for you to get any kind of money, you got to be getting millions of streams, right? So, but having said that, I guess the flip side of that is you're mentioning some of your clients are getting their music licensed into commercials and different things like that. So there are still ways to get basically to the point where you're in a self-sustaining music career. But yeah, what's your take on Spotify and, you know, necessary evil? But like, yeah, what I'm just here interested to see what you say about the streaming services.
Well, that's it, Matt. I mean, you've taken the words out of my mouth there. It is a necessary evil. And I think that until, and I won't, we don't need to go into this in massive detail, but until the blockchain technology to make sort of decentralized streaming and that side of things with music, until that becomes more accessible and more understandable for people, myself included, needs to understand it a bit better. But until that becomes more in the mainstream, as it were, streaming is the least worst option, which is essentially all it can be. And so, you know, what we do is, because you're right, because I mean, do you remember one of the funny stories I heard was, do you remember there was that song I Need a Dollar that came out, I don't know, 15 years ago or something it came out?
I do. I remember that. Yep.
So ironically, that song I Need a Dollar, that song was used in everything and it was everywhere for ages. And it's probably hundreds of millions of streams on Spotify. After the label had taken its cut and they'd covered their marketing costs and, you know, the manager had taken their cut and the publisher and, you know, blah, 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 the artist walked away with something like $4,000 from that song, from streaming. Man. Which is just crazy.
Rotten. Like, just rotten. Yeah.
So it's, you know, we've got Sean Parker and Napster to thank for that. But as soon as file sharing and peer-to-peer file sharing happened, really, that is, you know, I say again, it is the least worst option because people are not really willing to pay for music in the way that they were. And I think people are not going to go back to being willing to pay for music in the way that they are. I think what needs to happen is it needs to be decentralized so that, yes, there is a library that you can go onto, but the amount that the library takes relative to how much it pays the artist needs to be massively switched around. And in fact, it should be the company, you know, Spotify should be making what the artists make and the artist should be making what Spotify makes. Totally. It's backwards. Yeah. And it's a sort of a monopoly. Although, you know, I know there are multiple companies doing it, but there are a few companies that have, I suppose, a duopoly or a triopoly of streaming. What we do is try and coach our artists to make sure that they're not relying on streaming and also that they're clear that streaming is not going to be a source of income for them for some time. But it's a great way to have your music somewhere that people can go and listen to. And what I do with coaching and what, you know, other people in our team do when sort of advising their artists is make sure that they know that's just where people find your music. The revenue has to come from elsewhere, whether it's, you know, for some people, it's setting up a Patreon or setting up, you know, one of those sorts of things. Whether it is syncing your music and using it in TV and film, whether it's touring, whether it's merchandising. But yeah, it's the least worst thing. And we hope we come to a point where we don't need to rely on it quite so much. And I think within the next decade, Spotify is going to have to massively adapt its model because, as I said, that, you know, once that blockchain and sort of the NFT craze moves into the musical space, that's going to change everything because artists will be able to continue to own their music and continue to share their music whilst there doesn't need to be a kind of big brother making sure that everything's, you know, that they're taking their 98% of whatever it is that the customer is paying to listen to the music, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I don't want to get too far down the NFT rabbit hole. Maybe one day we'll have you back on and we could talk about it. But just because I know not everybody's familiar with it, and obviously don't want to get too much on a tangent. But yeah, I absolutely think NFTs, I agree with you, are the thing that's going to bring the power back to all mediums like, you know, filmmaking, musicians and all, you know. It already is kind of starting to show up in collectibles and just, you know, even like digital art. So it's just a matter of time before music and film get into it as well. But yeah, really cool that you brought that up. I view that Spotify is kind of, just to kind of piggyback on what you were saying, Spotify and Apple Music is sort of like a billboard, like a, here I am. Like, you know, it's a destination for people, but to your point, it's not, you're not going to be making too much money off of it. So cool. No, thanks, man. I appreciate you. Yeah. Kind of clearing up. I wanted to see what you thought of that as well. So talk a little bit about some of the, your favorite success stories. You sort of touched on it earlier as far as, you know, some of these folks that are coming in and it's just this big, you know, cathartic moment for them. It's been maybe some music they've been sitting on for 20, 30 years, you know, or there's a really touching story, a dedication to somebody. What are some of the big success stories that you have coming out of your studio?
You know, there's been so many for sort of different reasons. 'Cause it's funny, you know, some people who come and work with us, for example, we've got, I think it's probably best if I don't sort of give specific names of people, just because I'm not sure. But we have one guy who is just a really, really lovely man who we've worked with, who's actually based over here in the UK, who's an older guy. I think he's in his late 50s, nearly 60, who came to us about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, with a few songs, real kind of 60s vibe, sort of Beatles, Lennon sort of sound.
Cool.
And he came to us and he, you know, quite sort of humble guy, but loves his music and has wanted to do stuff for a really long time. And he said, you know, I've had these songs. He was in a situation where when he was in his like mid 20s or early 20s, he was offered some kind of record deal and turned it down.
Wow.
And I think maybe has spent some time just sort of going, oh, I wish I'd tried that and seen where it could have gone.
Sure.
And so he's someone who, you know, we've done, I think, probably a dozen, maybe more tracks with now that are out. And at the end of last year, oh no, it was the end of the year before, because we've just had New Year. Blimey, time is weird at the moment, isn't it?
Crazy, yeah.
At the end of 2022, at the end of 2020, I got an email from him. And actually, this was one of a few emails that were like this, but I got an email from him that said, you know, hey, Joe and the tours team, I just wanted to say thank you for like being able to work together this year. I don't know what I would have done. I would have gone crazy without this stuff. You know, it feels so nice like to finally have all of this material put out and to be able to listen to it after years and decades of imagining what it would be like. And you know, just thank you for being able to kind of bring this stuff to life. And so that really felt like a real... Because, you know, we also went through COVID too. So, you know, we were also as sort of depressed at the end of 2021 or 2020, sorry.
Yeah.
So that felt like a real victory because, and then actually speaking to him a few weeks ago, because we're still working with him on stuff, he told us that he'd had about 50,000 streams just on Spotify across the year. And this is without marketing anything. And, you know, seeing this older guy, you know, this guy who's basically the same age as my dad, talking about where all in the world all these different people are listening to his music, and you know, obviously that being something that he never considered that being a possibility, that there'd be people in the Philippines and Japan and Australia and the United States and South America and all these places listening to his stuff, seeing how much that meant to him. It was like watching a boy at Christmas who was just sort of overwhelmed with happiness about that stuff. So that, on that side of things, that really felt like a real victory. But I think on the other side, the more sort of businessy side, I think when we see stuff being featured, if I can switch on Netflix and I know certain shows that I can switch on and I can see, hey, so-and-so song is in there, we did that, or even a couple of films where we've had stuff that's been in there that's been really cool, and you know, that really helps. But honestly, I think when I first started online recording studio, I think the numbers were the thing that I was most sort of passionate about. So I tell people, yeah, we hit number one on this chart with this artist and we did this and we did this. But I think as the years have gone by and as we've worked with so many different people, it's the seeing that people who have come to work with us feel fulfilled and feel really happy in what they're doing. And you know, there's a lot of sort of happy tears that happen on the last calls with people, and sort of that's always really nice. And although not that we're trying to make people cry, but it's very nice to sort of see how much it means to people and know that we've been able to kind of help in a way. I think I'm just softening as I get older, maybe.
No, man, that's what it's all about, right? It's the tears of joy, hopefully, not the other ones. but
yeah, no, yeah, they're just absolutely miserable. They hated it all.
Yeah, exactly. Right. No, Joe, thanks for coming on the show today. Just a couple quick, quick questions before we sign off here.
Yeah.
You mentioned yourself not being a big social media person, but where can we find you online? I know I want to give a shout out. Your guys' website for the online recording studio, which I'll link in the show notes, is amazing. So anybody, I know we didn't get into, you know, the granular details of the website, but it's very comprehensive and easy to navigate as far as, okay, it kind of lists the different studio musicians that you can have access to. There's lots of different testimonials. It's very, it's a very well done website. So I would highly recommend anybody that enjoyed what we were talking about, myself and Joe today, go check that out. Where else can we find you online?
So Instagram is our big place to come and find us. It's just at the online recording studio. The one place I am sort of online personally is on LinkedIn. So if you're interested in coaching or strategy development for your music, add me on LinkedIn. Just search Joe Wadsworth and you'll be able to find me. Our website, yeah, you mentioned, we're to be honest, and one of the things that we sort of say to people is don't have too many social media platforms. And so I think Instagram is really the best place to come and find us, or just send us an email, and the address is on the website, and you'll be able to find it, maybe in the show notes as well, if that's possible.
Absolutely.
Just send your demos over.
Yeah, right on. And kind of a couple of fun questions before we end off here. What are you currently listening to today? What if we were to look in your Spotify playlist, or just on your iPad or whatever you're listening to?
Yeah.
What kind of stuff are you listening to?
So at the moment, I'm actually listening to Halsey's new album. I'd never listened to Halsey before, and I saw that her new album had been produced by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross. Trent Reznor of Nine Inch Nails. Yeah,
interesting.
And I really, really love their film scores that they do, because they work with David Fincher a lot. They did the film score to like The Social Network Gone Girl, Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And that's what I listen to when I'm working all the time, is Social Network soundtrack. And it's got shades of that, but it's an absolutely brilliant album. I've never listened to any more of her stuff, but yeah, I would strongly recommend the Halsey, the new record.
Awesome.
She sat on a throne on the cover. I can't remember what it's called though.
Yeah. I'll check it out. Cool. No, that's good to know. And thanks for giving a little insight as far as what you're listening to when you're working. That's cool. It's sort of the instrumental, more sort of classical or soundtracky kind of stuff without the words, then, I would assume, eh?
Definitely. Yeah. I find that if stuff has words in, I end up just reading back what I've written, and I realize that I've just written the song out. I used to listen to rap music, which was a real nightmare when it came to like responding to email, because I realized I'd just like written out like half an Eminem verse.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh no, actually I can't say that.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Probably omit that last part there. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. And Joe, one last question. Obviously you have the worldwide range with your current studio. If you were to be able to travel to three locations right now, you know, a pandemic's just a thing of the past, where would you go and why?
Okay, so the first one, I'm going to be, in about a month and a half's time, I'm going to be moving to Dubai for 3 months.
Really?
So Dubai would be number one.
Awesome.
Yeah, I went there about 3 years ago and I loved it. And I just think, but I probably couldn't stay there for too long, because it kind of feels a bit like a made up city. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's sort of
totally.
Like Sim City. So Dubai is one of them. I love going to Gambia, which is a little country in West Africa, and we've been a few times, and it's just the loveliest place with the loveliest people. So that would be my other place.
Cool.
And then I probably should pick somewhere I haven't been. I'd love to go to Tokyo.
Tokyo.
I think that would be very cool, and a massive culture shock.
Oh, big time.
And, you know, I think, there's a bunch of places. The other thing that I would like to do, I know you only asked for three, but one of the things we've talked about for years, and I would still love to do at some point, is get on a plane over to like Maine, and then get a sort of camper van or something like that, and do a bit of a road trip zigzagging to, you know, across America, and actually just go and visit some of the artists that we've worked with the years in person.
That'd be rad.
Cause it would be so cool. Many people have been like, and hey, if you're ever in, you know, South Carolina, come say hello. And I'm like, okay, yeah. If it happens, why not? I think those would be my three probably.
That's awesome. Really good answers. Joe, thanks for your time today. And definitely check out Joe Wadsworth on LinkedIn, as well as the online recording studio. And obviously the sites will be in the show notes. And yeah, man, I'll have you back on. It sounds like you guys got some big plans for the future. So I'd love to do a check-in, and whether it's 6, 12 months down the road, and just see how you're doing.
That would be great. And thank you for having me, man. It's been my pleasure.